So equanimity, very interesting area to touch on here in 2026, right? And it's based on insight into the nature of things. If we see clearly, we're freed from being jerked around. And that brings us inner stability, kind of a deep keel to keep things stable no matter what. And the less we cling to self and to objects to which self is attracted, the deeper our equanimity is. Because equanimity is, it's all about clinging and aversion, the lack thereof. It's all about clinging and aversion. Gil Fronsdal, great Western teacher, he says the capacity to not be caught up with what happens to us. That's his definition of equanimity. The capacity to not be caught up with what happens to us. And that sounds simple, but we can't force this because otherwise it's stiff. We have to grow into it. There's something that changes in us that makes equanimity emerge, that takes us beyond stickiness. So in its essence, equanimity is a balanced and steady response to whatever arises, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. Just it arises out of wisdom. It's a wisdom-based response. So there's a sense in which equanimity is another way of seeing the fruition of the path. It's a way of understanding where the path takes us, this inner freedom. And the degree to which we realize freedom from clinging is also the degree to which equanimity arises, because then we're not slaves to attachments and aversion. It's right at the core of, second noble truth. And this is it's a deep change. To really be able to live with some equanimity is wonderful. It's upekkha in Pali, and there's a kind of conventional and ultimate way of seeing what it is on a conventional level. It suggests emotional steadiness and some calmness of heart and mind, no matter conditions. So that's it's important. And we in our emotional lives with the people close to us to cultivate that is certainly relevant. Our emotional maturity and all that, but deeper at the ultimate level gets to the very heart of awakening, to the wisdom that arises from this practice. The Pali word, it means to look over. Upekkha means to look over, which is kind of interesting. It gives us an idea of perspective about what may be arising rather than being lost in it. We look over it. And it refers, in one way, to the power of mindfulness. The way insight changes our relationship with everything. And it just equanimity emerges through our mindfulness practice, whether pleasant or unpleasant. As we cultivate mindfulness, we gradually dismantle the sense there's anything worth grasping, and we dismantle, or it dismantles, the sense there's anybody to grasp. So it kind of comes apart from both aspects just inherently. In the journey of our practice, Gil Fronsdal says, one of the primary insights is the nature of impermanence. In the deepest forms of insight, we see that things change so quickly that we can't hold on to anything, and eventually the mind lets go of clinging. Letting go brings equanimity. The greater the letting go, the deeper the equanimity. So it's like a deep balance, a sense of stability despite outer conditions. And I think it's really helpful to kind of reference outer conditions and whatever, seems difficult out there to just sort of check out to exercise our equanimity with that difficulty. And also, when it's a really pleasant condition, as this fine gentleman was saying, to exercise it there too, and then we can be stable. And it's not static, but dynamic. Because the very sense of this wisdom, of this listening, it's responsive and opening and listening. We're listening. There's equanimity. It's interpersonal. We're listening to what is coming at us. So, as some of you know, this is part of the other Brahma Viharas, or just forgot the other English word. Come on, really. Anyway, loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy. What's the other word? I just can't remember. Yeah, the divine abodes. Thank you. Yep. So compared to the other three, which are loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy, equanimity is the one most closely related to impermanence, to not self, to emptiness. So in a sense, loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy, they're qualities of mind and heart that we cultivate. They emerge, but we also cultivate them in the practice of the Brahma Viharas. But equanimity, we primarily realize, we see it. It arises in practice. And it strengthens with our deepening realization, our deepening seeing moment by moment. Gil, Franz Dahl says, equanimity is one of the most sublime emotions of Buddhist practice. It is a ground for wisdom and freedom and the protector of compassion and love. While some may think of equanimity as dry neutrality or cool aloofness, mature equanimity produces a radiance and warmth of being. The Buddha described a mind filled with equanimity as abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility, and without ill will. Upeka refers to the equanimity that arises from the power of observation, the ability to see without being caught by what we see. When well developed, such power gives rise to a great sense of peace. And a key point is that equanimity is not indifference. That's always with all four Brahma Viharas, there's the near enemy that kind of looks like it, but it isn't. And in this case, indifference can look a little bit like equanimity. You know, if we're sort of indifferent, we're backed off, nothing's going to bother us, we're steady, we're not reacting, but that's just obliviousness, and that's a kind of defensiveness if we're backing away. So that's not equanimity, and it's not compassion for sure, because equanimity is really the steady balance is in the middle of being fully aware and fully engaged and leaning into right in the middle of chaos and finding balance there, all right in the middle of whatever is coming at you, whether internally or externally, to be able to find, to go down into the realization of what the reality is and not get grabbed. Here's what the Buddha said in the Middle Length Discourses. Equanimity supported by the wholesome is the equanimity of insight. The sixfold equanimity of neither attraction nor aversion toward agreeable and disagreeable objects that appear at the six sense doors. So it's that same theme, attraction and aversion. The six contacts, sight, hearing, touch, taste, smell, and mind. Those are the sense doors. And, you know, life can seem like a torrent of input, and it takes roots to stay stable in the middle of that. And often equanimity is most important just when things are gnarly, just when things are difficult, whether it's with the people you love or the political stuff, you know, whatever worries you, can seem like a storm at sea. And that's why I love the keel metaphor. You know, any of you are all boaters, you got a keel down there, and a boat with a strong keel can kind of rocks through it, but it gets through it and stays upright. And it's just when things are tempest-tossed, when we develop equanimity, that we can also respond with compassion. They go hand in hand because we understand we're not, you know, separation comes when we're caught in grasping an aversion, and especially in difficult times, we're caught in aversion. So that's not compassion. That's wanting it to stop or feeling the other is causing something. So to be able to see it clearly, compassion can arise. And you, when you think of the eight worldly winds, pleasure and pain, gain and loss, good reputation, bad reputation, praise and blame, those are all pressures on us. That's all the kind of stuff that buffets us, right? And, you know, what can be more upsetting to our equanimity than being blamed for something, for instance, especially if it's not fair or not true? Someone says, you are this person, and maybe it does just seems like factually that's just not how it is, but it's coming at us. So then, to have equanimity then, that's pretty powerful. Sometimes it just won't be fair. And equanimity can take us past any kind of, you know, tit for tat, any kind of sense of things have to be fair, and go deeper. And it may be just what a situation needs, because a person accusing us, that's probably how it looks to them. Just how it is, you know? It's just how it is right now. So one way to understand this equanimity better is in the context of the nature of reality, the three characteristics. Many of you know these three: impermanence, not self, and dukkha, which is really at the root of how mindfulness practice works, how it brings us into insight. And generally impermanence, that's what clarifies first in our insight practice, because we settle into moment by moment mindfulness as much as we can. And we see that phenomena, you know, appearance appears and vanishes. It just keeps moving. A lot of times the things that we think are, I can't get my mind to stop, we're actually seeing impermanence. I always try to take the high road, the positive way of thinking about that. It's not a mess. It's, oh, we're seeing impermanence because everything's arising and passing. We're just seeing it. So that's okay. And sometimes, you know, I think of, I know I said this before, but it somehow made a big impact on me, the 9/11 Memorial in Manhattan, where these two big fountains where the towers were, and the water's just thundering down. You can't see where it's going. It's just these big roaring thing just falling into. And that's kind of how impermanence seems to me a lot of times. Like it's just falling away, falling away, falling away. Just plunging down there. So that's disconcerting. But over time, we just kind of realize that's how it is. That's how it's always been. And the more we realize that, impermanence becomes okay. You know, that's just how it is, and we can become relaxed with it and just accept it, and it's not a problem. We're not, just like you were describing, we're not trying to grab it and have it not go away, the good stuff or the bad stuff not arrive. We're not fighting it anymore. We start to realize that change is our home. It's not staticness that's our home. Change is our home, and it always was. And our suffering, the second arrow, comes from trying to stop change or resist change, which is as futile as trying to stop water from going over a waterfall. So when we resisted change, we were, you know, batted around by it, not liking aversion. And how can you have equanimity like that when we're at the mercy of change? But the more we can see equanimity and really realize it, the more we can see impermanence and realize it, then equanimity just arises out of that in an inherent way. And then secondly, as we realize the nature of impermanence, we also gradually awaken to an associated phenomena that everything we cherish or dislike, all the phenomena that hit us, they're all interdependent, because everything appears because it was caused by something else. Every thought, every feeling, every tree falling, all of its cause and effect. And when we start to see that, we really start to see it. We really start to see it. Then all these parts are interacting, constant cause and effect. So everything we identify as a thing, whether it's our sense of self or our car, it's not a thing, but an assemblage of moving and changing parts. And the more we can really penetrate that in our practice, then equanimity inherently arises out of that, because we're just not going to be so stuck. And, you know, look at people that get extremely agitated about when things do or do not go the way they want. They're totally concretizing those phenomena and grasping onto them. And either the, you know, the personal me wanting that or the that that they want. In either case, it's concrete. So it just gets more natural, more spacious, and equanimity arises just inherently from our practice. We want things, you know, want things to go, we want things to stay, but we see that they're just not as solid as we might have thought, and we can just let it happen in this moment, this moment, this moment, this moment, and see how we are with what happens. It was really amazing being in that. I really appreciated that Great Vow Monastery. They've been there for quite a few decades, and it's really nice to be in. I don't do Zen practice, and suddenly, bam! I was in Zen practice world, and it was all very, you know. We did the morning sit and everything. Really strong vibe of a different vibe. It was very interesting. But there was a deep sense of just accepting what happens. It kind of came up in lots of different ways. Not you don't take action. Sure, you take action, but at the same time, what happens is what happens, and just rolling into it. It was really powerful. I just liked the flavor. It was so distinctly different. The flavor of the energy was really a darndest thing. Just sitting there, it was different and the same. So true equanimity is related to awakening, which means we navigate the world freely, happily, fully, in each moment fearing nothing. You know, it brings us fearlessness. And it integrates the other three Brahma Viharas, loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy, in a balanced connection with beings that's deep and present. Bhikkhu Bodhi says this, and he's, as some of you know, a great translator of the Nikayas, and also a great monastic and very compassionate person who's done a huge amount of work in terms of relieving hunger around the world. He's really quite something. He said, the real meaning of upekkha is equanimity, not indifference in the sense of unconcern for others. As a spiritual virtue, upekkha means stability in the face of the fluctuations of worldly fortune. It is evenness of mind, unshakable freedom of mind, a state of inner equipoise that cannot be upset by gain and loss, honor and dishonor, praise and blame, pleasure and pain. Upekkha is freedom from all points of self-reference. It is indifference only to the demands of the ego self with its craving for pleasure and position, not to the well-being of one's fellow human beings. And then I'm going to finish with a quote from the Buddha, from the Dhammapada. As a solid mass of rock is not stirred by the wind, so a sage is not moved by praise and blame. As a deep lake is clear and undisturbed, so a sage becomes clear upon hearing the Dharma. Virtuous people always let go. They don't prattle about pleasures and desires. Touched by happiness and then by suffering, the sage shows no sign of being elated or depressed. So that's the deep keel of equanimity. Let's sit for a minute.